Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. My name is Ollie Silverton, and this week we look ahead to the conclusion of the DP World Tour season and our first season of The Tips. We will also be looking at the RSM Classic on the PGA Tour. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, it is the final show of the season. We have three very special guests. We have Ben Coley returning, who obviously does plenty of writing, mainly at Sporting Life. We then have Matt Cooper, who is a golf writer at all good publications, and Kit Alexander, commentator on the DP World Tour. He stepped into the hosting chair and did a much better job than me, but he is back in the expert eye. But let's just get straight into it. Here's some opinions on some of the golf from last week, because it was very exciting indeed. Let's start with the Nedbank Golf Challenge. And I want to come to you first, Ben, because it was Max Homer and his first win overseas. And I think I saw on Twitter, you mentioned just what a journey this has been, because a few years ago, he was nearly sort of lost to golfing wilderness, and what a comeback and journey. And he could become, it's fair to say, one of the absolute greats.
Well, you know, he's got a little way to go to get there. He knows what's next. I mean, he's won Africa's major, but the thing missing really now is to go and contend for a proper major, I suppose. But listen, it was a fantastic performance, not least because he hadn't played since the Ryder Cup. And probably a good lesson for me. I mean, I'm one who, personally, I think I get a bit hung up on golfers having been away for a while. And actually, these elite players, they can slot back into it pretty easily, can't they? And he showed us that with a brilliant performance. I wrote in my preview last week, he's a thoroughly popular player. And I think his journey has played a part in that, because I suppose of the impact it's had on him as a person, and how humble he appears to be. Off air, Matt was saying we have a tendency to eulogize a little about normal people, but he seems like a normal person, and that's the part of the appeal. Anyone who studies swings more than I do, I mean, I'm a terrible golfer, but he has a textbook golf swing that a lot of people could learn from in terms of the rhythm of it and everything like that. And he's got a game with no weaknesses, really. You think someone says to you, what does Max Homer do well? You'd actually almost struggle to answer, and in some ways that's a compliment because he does everything better than most. So a fabulous player, not a surprise that he was willing to come and try something new. I hope he manages to fit Wentworth onto his schedule. I'd like to see that. I know it does clash with the Fortinet Championship, an event close to home that he's won a couple of times already. But listen, who cares about that? That's all in the future. For now, it was a fine way to cap another brilliant year for a player who seems like he'll be a permanent fixture at elite levels for many years to come.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned his coach there, Ben. And Justin Rose has actually switched over to him earlier this year as well. And when I was speaking to Justin and his people about that, he specifically said it's because he liked the work that he'd seen him doing with Max Homer. So, I mean, that just tells you how far Homer's come in the game and how admired his swing is, to go from, you know, nearly giving up the game to now Justin Rose is looking at him and going, actually, I'm looking for a new direction. I quite fancy working with his coach because of what he's been able to do with Max Homer and what Max Homer has been able to do in the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, that just goes to show how far he's come and how good his swing and his technique is right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is remarkable. And he's playing some phenomenal golf. And if he's the new flavour of the month, let's go, or the year, if we go across to the Butterfield Bermuda Championship, we saw Camila Villegas, which is just a beautiful, heartwarming golf story, I think, overall. And he came very close the week before until Erik van Rooyen magic did it. And again, lots of storylines there, obviously. Matt, what did you make of that and his win in his pretty white outfit that he often goes with, the Nike high tops? It's some of the great attire on the course. But what did you make of Camilla's efforts?
Well, I think, like everybody else who watches golf and who's probably got a heart, it was just spectacular to watch and see somebody who's been through so much. And he came up with a wonderful quote afterwards, sort of explaining about how golf had sent him into the downs and also given him plenty of highs. And then he sort of backed it up and said that life had done that as well. And we all know the story about how he and his wife lost their baby daughter, Mia. And it's wonderful to see that they've managed to find strength from such a difficult situation. And I actually thought that Alex Noren's reaction to it was kind of like he was speaking for lots of us, because he gave Vijegas the time to sort of appreciate what had happened and just how his life had changed and just what he'd been through. And he stood back, allowed it to happen, gave Vijegas a big hug, and then spoke about how much, you know, he'd lost out on the victory, Alex Noren, but he was very pleased to see that somebody had won it who deserved some good times. And it's actually also quite interesting that you mentioned apparel, Ollie, because Noren's apparel at the moment is a wonderful throwback to the 1970s. He's wearing Admiral gear. And I was completely unaware of this until the Open. And there were lots of signposts up in Hoylake about his Admiral gear. Then I saw him wearing it. And his outfit on Sunday was just spectacular. I mean, I almost expected him to be wearing 1970s goalies gloves as well, because it was literally like a sort of a 1970s goalies top. It was just tremendous. But yet, two very good people at the top in the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. And I think we can all safely say that it was another result that actually it warms the heart.
It really does, yeah. Both weeks, I think overall and everything, there's a lot, shows there's a lot more to golf, but it's lovely when good things happen to good people. And that is fantastic and very happy for him. And what a fortnight or 12 days it's been, from almost obscurity to doing very well. And there's been a big few weeks on the PGA Tour. And we'll look at that later with the RSM Classic, because important times for everyone in and around the bubble. But first, we will start with the DP World Tour Championship. Yes, that's right. It is time that we head to the Earth Course on Jumeirah Golf Estate, somewhere we all know incredibly well by now. It's Greg Norman designed. And I think the best place to start is with our man on the ground. Kit Alexander is there. I think that fire exit door on the beautiful sunny terrace. So what is the atmosphere like at the moment? What can we take away from the course?
I thought I'd done a really good job of hiding that it's a door and it's just a lovely wooden backdrop. But it's beautiful out here on the terrace. It's very hot. There's a great vibe around the place. I remember the very first time I came to this event, probably 7 or 8 years ago now, one of the biggest surprises was how relaxed everyone was and how chilled. You think it's the Tour Championship, DP World Tour Championship. There's so much on the line, money, points, ranking positions, that it's going to be quite a tense week and everyone's really focused in on it. But actually, early in the week, there's a bit of a party celebration vibe, because you're top 50, you've had a great season to get here. Of course, once the tee balls go down in anger, everyone gets a bit more serious once the tournament begins. But it is a great place to be, because, you know, everyone here has played well this year. There's a good vibe. That being said, on the range this morning, a lot of quite intense work being done with players and coaches, to be honest. There weren't too many just going through the motions or aimless sessions. There was some intensity out there, some guys definitely working on things, because at the end of the day, it is a big week. It's probably the last time the majority of these players will tee it up this year. Maybe some will play in the Hero. A few might go down and start next season in South Africa. But for a lot of guys, this is the last big hurrah before Christmas, before the end of the year, and a chance to fulfill their own goals, whether that's maybe a last chance for a win, getting into the top 50 in the majors ahead of next year, or just forcing their way further up the race to Dubai. Top 10, not otherwise exempt in that, of course, do get their PGA Tour cards for next season. And that is big on a lot of people's minds this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a big end of season party there in vibe. We're getting that as well at the tips. It's just big moments, big performances all round. You can sense that. And there are some big names in the field, Ben. Obviously, as Kit mentioned, some phenomenal ones. Do you see it again that with this exceptional field, we're looking at another slight domination top of the market? Or do you think there is possibilities a bit lower down? Because we have seen some, especially each way returns, for some big prices throughout the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically about evens, whether you want the big three or the field. So you can have 47 golfers, or you can have Rahm, Hovland and McIlroy. And I think this is one of the rare occasions where actually you can probably make a very strong case for taking Rahm, Hovland and McIlroy. Now, obviously, that's not generally how we like to bet on golf, and we'll be looking for some more interesting selections, I suppose, if interesting is the right word. I do think there are a couple of dynamics that Kit's touched upon there, which are really interesting and were certainly at the forefront of my thinking here. So we've got the fact that the race to Dubai is wrapped up. So Rory McIlroy has deservedly, in my opinion, won the race to Dubai. That means John Rahm, Adrian Meronk, they're not worrying about that. When they go out in race to Dubai order in previous years, generally it's been you know, jostling and keeping an eye on each other and a sense of playing for more than the tournament. That's all out the window at the top. The other thing is obviously those PGA Tour cards, as Kit mentioned. Unless I've got the maths wrong, and I don't think I have, everybody right down to Dan Brown in 50th, if you win this tournament, you're on the PGA Tour. That is a massive, massive thing. And I think it's going to make it very hard. You look at the guys who are on the bubble, if you like. You've got players like Rasmus Højgaard, desperate to join Nicolai, who's already got status next year. You've got Rio Hisatsune, who until recently really wasn't involved in this conversation. You've got Yannick Paul, who feels like he's been under the gun all year, playing under some sort of pressure. I think for golfers like that to go ahead and win a tournament this big when it has that extra carrot and when they're probably going to have to beat Rahm or McIlroy or Hovland or Fitzpatrick or Hatton or Fleetwood or all of them, I think it's a really, really big ask. So I'll get to my selections in a bit, but my methodology definitely involved a sense of, right, are there some guys who don't have to worry about that kind of thing, who don't have to worry about permutations? And actually, it applies to the big names, certainly in the betting, those big three, and I think it might help them. But it might help a couple of other guys as well who have already got status on the PGA Tour for next year, and that's certainly going to colour my selections.
Okay, great. So, Ben, there you're, if we're saying you're focusing a bit on the mental, emotional side, and this feels like a little reverse for you, Matt. I'm going to you for the pure numbers technical side, and not a story about a woman in a cafe, which I'm looking forward to later. But we're going to go the hard-hitting stuff, because this is a course we know really well. And unlike some tournaments, we've got a good set of data, don't we, over years and years of what sort of we're looking at in terms of metrics when betting. So when you're looking at this market, what have you been looking at in terms of numbers and scoring and everything from the field that for guys who maybe lower down can take on the big three?
Yeah, and as you alluded to, Ollie, there is, you know, we're not without hope to try and find a big, juicy each-way price. There have been many three-figure golfers who have got into the places. And just a few years ago, I was actually on Nicolai Højgaard when he made the places at 70-1. And he actually gives you quite a clue, as does Adrian Maronk, who's also got into the play. He finished seventh last year. They would have been from the outsiders, but the reason they got in is because they're exceptionally good from the tee. So that's a really, really big factor this week, as is the final four holes, which are built for excitement. And that's genuinely the case, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, 15, I think you'd have to describe as a little bit funky. I mean, it's a, you know, if there's a hole that's begging people to go for the green rather than layup, it might be that one because of the bunk. You know, the layup is hard and it's infuriating as a punter if your player lays up into one of those fairway bunkers. As it is if your player does what Rory McIlroy did and hits the flag with their approach shot and spins off the front of the green. I mean, that is the epitome. I think sometimes risk-reward gets thrown around a little bit. That is a risk-reward par four. You've got the 16th, which has got a sort of green that must, from the fairway, I mean, Kit will be able to tell me more about this, but from the fairway, it must look as though there's kind of nothing but water, you know, particularly when they put the pin front right. There is nothing but water surrounding the 17th green. And then you've got the 18th where you can hit a very good drive and a slight misjudgment. I remember Tyrrell Hatton doing it when he was, I think, tied for the lead on the final hole. You're in that little creek. So it's a fantastic finish to the golf course, a real nice rhythm to it. Loads of opportunities, but certainly holes where things can go wrong as well.
Yeah, it's an intimidating look, that 16th. And also the way the fairway shapes and cambers a little bit, you can quite often have ball below your feet. So, and that just makes that flight want to move left to right closer to the water. So it's not really one you want to chase, but it comes at a time in the tournament when there are players that are going to need to chase and make something happen. I mean, John Rahm's made something happen three times here before, three-time winner. I had a very brief chat with him this morning, and who better to ask about the course than the bloke who's won here more than anyone else. And it was funny, he said, you know, actually, I don't really know why I've got such a good record here, but then thought about it for a second and said, well, it's obviously a ball striker's course, and there's maybe one or two bunkers off the tee that I can take on and carry that some others can't. So again, that just backs up from the guy that's won it three times here, exactly what you guys are saying. It's a ball striker's track. It values good shots off the tee, especially. And especially if you've got that little bit of extra juice to maybe cut the odd corner or carry one or two bunkers that not everyone in the field.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, unsurprising, so if we look at the top of the market, John Rahm is right up there, around 11-2. He's matched by Victor Hovland at similar odds, but it's Rory heading up at 5-1, who's obviously had success here as well. And if we're talking distance and cutting corners, he's pretty good at that as well, Rory. And just behind them, there's a good gap, nearly triple the odds there for Tyrrell Hatton at 14s. Again, as Ben mentioned, has played here well, and a couple of unlucky bounces towards creeks on the last good in his way. Tyrrell Hatton, 14, Tommy Fleetwood, 14s. Matt Fitzpatrick, famous picture we've seen of him with the trophy at 14s. He's low at 9s in other places. And then we get into Minwoo Lee and 18-1 alongside Tom Kim, also Jonghyun Kim on odds checker, 18-1. First time for him, and an excitement machine. He's going to love the crowds that get out and about, it's fair to say, this week. So with that in mind, let's go to the guys for their opening picks and to hear if they're taking on the big names. So Ben, we'll start with you, and who's going to headline select for us?
As I said before, I want someone who's not got anything bigger to worry about, ideally, or something that might weigh heavy on them on Sunday. And if you're not backing one of the top three, and for what it's worth, my preference would be for John Rahm, who's played in this tournament four times and three players have beaten him. Two of them aren't playing this week. Matt Wallace is the only player in this field who has finished ahead of John Rahm at the Earth Course, which is fairly ridiculous. But such a run will come to an end, I'm sure, at some stage. And I'm happy enough to go a little bit bigger. And anyway, I've landed on Minwoo Lee. You'd think he's made for this course. I think pound for pound, it's between him and Nicolai Højgaard for who's the longest hitter in this field. Might just be Minwoo now. He seems to have put on another 5 or 10 yards. He's a brilliant chipper and putter. His short game is absolutely world-class. As with quite a lot of modern golfers who come through with his sort of background, iron play is the sort of missing piece of the puzzle. A bit of finesse, maybe you could argue, is needed. He's certainly improved it over the past sort of 18 months. He's obviously a Rolex Series winner already, beat Matt Fitzpatrick and Thomas Dietrich to win the Scottish Open a couple of summers ago. We've seen all year his star really rise, you know, fifth in the US Open, top 20 at the PGA, in the mix at the Players. You know, he's just been a pretty permanent fixture. Into the autumn, he was a brilliant winner in Macau a couple of weeks ago, shot 30 under par that week. And I know, you know, the field strength was nothing compared to this week, but 10 shots back to third place, it was a serious performance. And in some ways, just as impressive, I thought, was a really good finish to finish sixth in the Zozo Championship in Japan. I wouldn't have that down necessarily as his best course, to be honest with you, quite tight. And although he's got some form on that kind of course, I think this one should suit him much, much better. He's played here twice, top 20 both times, just on the fringes of the top 10 last time. But the interesting thing for me is on both occasions, his putter didn't really do what we know it can. He's the fourth ranked putter in this field on 2023 form. He's been below average in both of his previous starts at the course. So he's done it on the back of his driver and without his short game. And I think he was second in strokes gained tee to green 2 years ago when Colin Morikawa won. And yet he finished 16th. He wouldn't have known it, really. So he's come a long way since, despite not getting that big win since Scotland that his performances probably merit. But I think we'd all probably agree that he's on his way to the very top of the game, actually, in my opinion, if he can find that little improvement with his wedge game in particular, he'd certainly be a welcome addition to the top of the sport, a real player with superstar potential. And this would be a great way to underline that. And I think he's one of those, if you saw him in the final group on Sunday, I mean, he's played in the final group with Scottie Scheffler this year. He did okay. I think he'll do better next time. So if it is rubbing shoulders with Rory or John Rahm or Victor Hovland or whoever, I think you'd still be hopeful Minwoo Lee could get it done.
Yeah, my first pick is Matt Fitzpatrick. I'm quite persuaded by Ben's notion of just how dominant John Rahm is here. But the reason why I've gone for Fitzpatrick ultimately is that Ollie mentioned earlier on, you can get at 14-1, but elsewhere he's as low as nines, and I tend to sort of agree with the shorter number, and it's just down to his fondness for the course. He's the one guy who has repeatedly and has a sustained defying of that notion that you have to hit the ball a long way. And he does it just because his driving game is very good, even if it's not of the longest. And of course, he's also added length over the years to his tee shots. But he's at 8 starts here, 6 of them top 10s, 2 wins. And I just think that's like a really strong case. When you add in his recent form, which sort of, it's almost like everyone's forgotten. He played so well at the Ryder Cup, of course, won the Donnell Links the week after, but he'd sort of dropped hints before then. He'd been in contention in America. Also, he'd been the 54 leader before he kind of contrived to lose to Ludvig Åberg up in the Swiss Alps. So I think he's in good form. He loves the golf course, and I just tend to think that he's more likely nines than the 14s that you can get with him. And I think there's another alternative with Fitzpatrick is to get a bit fiddly, and you can get 16-1 enhanced win and 11-10 for a top 10. And that would almost give you a bit, you know, extra value with the win and a little bit of security on his performance backing that up.
I really like Fitzy. When you were talking about the big three at the start, I put out a tweet not long ago before recording this, and I spoke about a big four this week and whether anyone can get past them. And Fitzy was the fourth alongside, of course, Hovland, Rahm and McIlroy. He does have an absolutely brilliant record here. And it's interesting that both of you guys have gone for players who have played more recently than Rahm, Hovland and McIlroy. And I was just wondering, and we alluded to it, it was interesting that it came part of the storyline at the top of the show with Homer and Ben, you saying maybe you're going to change your thinking a little bit in terms of coming off of a long break with Homer winning there. The fact that the big three in the market are coming off of a longer break this week, I just wonder if you're factoring that in, or I guess on the flip side, as we go to your other picks, how much you're looking positively upon players who are bringing form and momentum, having actually teed it up on the DP World Tour in the last two or three events.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with Homer, you can be made to look silly, can't you? Ultimately, world-class players, you know, 6 weeks off, they can do it. But I guess even if I sort of temper that idea that, you know, I don't think anyone would be shouting from the rooftops here, you know, Rory's not played since the Ryder Cup, no chance. You know, we're just probably looking more at, does he have everything that you'd want if you take him 5-1? And I would say it's not a positive. So even if it's not a negative, I don't think it can be seen as a positive that he's not been playing golf when others have. And it's certainly a change in terms of this tournament specifically. You know, he's come into it on the back of a tournament like the CJ Cup before. And the same for Rahm. I mean, Rahm has won this on a break from the Spanish Open, which is what he's trying to do this time. And he's the one of those three who has played since the Ryder Cup, which is another little reason to think maybe he should be the favourite. But yes, yeah, certainly, I think golfers who've got a few more rounds under their belt should feel sharp, and there's just a chance. You know, we've all seen it before, certainly in Abu Dhabi at the start of the season, where someone like a McIlroy, who, by the way, year upon year got beat in Abu Dhabi, didn't he? Had all these chances to win, and maybe he just wasn't as sharp as he could have been when he's getting beat by Pablo Arrizabal and Gary Stahl and other surprise winners of that event, Robert Rock being another one. So maybe there's just that 1%, and that's kind of all. You know, the market certainly doesn't take it into account. The market prices them on their ability. And yeah, if there's any potential for Russ, then it's reason enough, despite what I said about Max Homer.
To some extent, it might be worth me jumping into my second pick, because I've gone a little bit oddball, and I've actually gone with Rory McIlroy first round leader. And part of that is that I think he's got the capacity to put in a really good low score, and one or two of them this week, maybe in three. But that chance that he might struggle to get four in a row. And that makes me a little bit wary for the 5-1, but you can get 11-1 that he's the first round leader, and the stats kind of made me quite persuaded when you look at them. In the UAE alone, he's made 37 starts, so that's 37 round ones. He's had 5 solo leads and 4 share leads, and then his last 3 rounds on the Earth course, he's twice been the low scorer, he's twice been the co-low scorer, and he's also twice been second. So the modern-day Rory McIlroy knows how to go low around the Earth course. And I think if you can get 11-1 each way, I kind of quite like that. And when I build that against the idea that he's so much shorter to win the tournament, I was kind of persuaded that I can actually get with one of the top three and actually feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, great. I mean, I'm not surprised when you said I'm going to go a bit oddball coming from you. That is perfect. But yeah, as you say, you have to see the top of the market. You will see the prices. I always find that with the first round leaders and middle of the range, they actually are less enticing. I think that's a first. In the last episode, it's a first that one of the tips is first round leader. But it's great, and we like to see it. And Ben, we'll roll into your, we can do your second, third, but it's limited field this week. So I think we've got sort of three picks overall for this event. So who are you rolling to? Are you going for someone who's a bit out of practice, or someone who's been playing and keeping the clubs warm?
No, two players who were in South Africa last week, both of them played pretty well, certainly early on in the tournament, suffered blips thereafter. Very similar players, actually. And that, again, my formula is kind of, I want someone who can compete with these guys off the tee and someone who's probably a little bit sharper, potentially anyway, and someone who isn't looking over their shoulder in Race to Dubai or anything like that. So the two players I've got are Adrian Meronk and Vincent Norman. I think Adrian's a big price here at 33-1 in a place. He might be 28-1 now. I think it's very hard to argue with when he's a four-time winner over the past sort of 15 months. Okay, the next step is to go. He's won big titles, but he's not necessarily had to beat the best players on the circuit or in the world to win those. But I do think he's capable. I think he's generally held his own. I think he learned a lot, actually, when he played with Rory at the Dubai Desert Classic last year and really felt like he belonged in that kind of company. And we know he does. And obviously, I think in some ways, not being able to win the Race to Dubai now, while that will be disappointing, he wouldn't have expected to win it going into the Ned Bank. He needed a massive finish to the season. Now that's gone. It's all about one final chance to show what the Ryder Cup side were missing and also to rubber stamp his PGA Tour card. He'll get a card whatever happens this week. And in terms of the course itself, seventh last year, he's played eight rounds here. He's already got 65 and a 66. And when I say he's played eight rounds here, actually, you can multiply that number because he spends winter in Dubai, practices at this golf course, and he knows it really, really well. So, no surprise if Adrian's involved from a very early stage. Final thing on him, the draw as it is, he's third. So he doesn't, Rory and John Rahm will play with each other on Thursday and he'll be playing with Ryan Fox. And I quite like that as well, that he doesn't have to be right in the spotlight straight away. And as for Vincent Norman, he won the Irish Open at this kind of price, 50-1 thereabouts. He's won two of his last 10 tournaments. A little bit of fortune probably involved in both of those. But I do think he's a player who continues to be underestimated. I think he's got real potential to be a top 50 staple and a potential Ryder Cup player of the future. In terms of what he does off the tee, he's one of the very best drivers in this field. I think that's a key club. And I thought he played nicely. I mean, said it last week, Sun City, although again, a world-class player can always make you look silly. Experience generally is something we've always talked about as necessary there. And I thought a top 20 on his debut was fine. Drove the ball well. And I think he'll find this course more to his liking. Another one who's got nothing to worry about. If he wins this, he might finish second or third on the Race to Dubai. Doesn't make a big difference apart from money, which is nice, but he's won plenty of that lately.
Yeah, my only other pick this week is Sami Välimäki. All quite straightforward, this really. He's actually won on a Greg Norman course before at Al Muj in Oman. He also finished 13th at Fire Course on the resort. Most importantly, I think he was fifth on debut here in 2020. And then he won in Doha a couple of weeks ago. And he wouldn't be the first person to thrive at Doha and then do well here. Lots and lots of winners here and people who've gone close to winning here have done very well at Doha. I think that package is all quite nice, given that he's quite a big price. You can get him, I think you can get him at 100-1, actually. I've got one other little point, actually. Ben's been talking about Adrian Meronk, and I noticed that the 65 he scored last year in the third round, John Rahm and Rory McIlroy also scored 65 that day, and they were three better than anyone else in the field. That's pretty good company and quite a nice little backup of his quality.
I've got good and bad news for you, Ben, on your two picks. The first I'm going to go with the good, because as you rightly said, Meronk lives out here, loves it out here. Plays the course lows. Having a chat to him and his coach, Matt Tipper, this morning. And he said it's just such a confidence thing. He struggled a little bit when he first got to the course, but now he can stand on the tees, be around the greens, be on the greens and play it with freedom because he knows the lines. He knows how the ball's going to react. And he's really, really confident here. Feels totally at home. So he's in a great mind space. The slight flip side to that on Vincent Norman, he is a brilliant driver of the ball, but he is, as I alluded to earlier, a few players going through some pretty intense sessions and coaching on the range. He was one of them, and he didn't look totally happy and comfortable with the woods and the driver. He was moving it a little bit too much through the air for his liking. I mean, it is Tuesday morning, so I'm sure he will iron it out. Probably nothing too much to worry about. As you say, his form has been excellent over the last two or three months and since breaking through and winning in the States, really. He doesn't have to worry about the PGA Tour cards on the line. But yeah, he just wasn't 100% happy with his woods and that driver, especially this morning. Sami Välimäki, I was commentating when he won in Qatar. Brilliant performance, great player. in the wind, the Finn. But even as he was in contention midway through in Qatar, he was talking about how desperate he was for one of those 10 PGA Tour cards. He went on, won that event. He's in a really good spot. I think he's about sixth of those 10 not otherwise exempt. But with massive points here, I spoke to him earlier and he doesn't feel safe. I kind of went up to him, oh, congratulations, great win, great to see you. You know, must be feeling pretty confident about the PGA Tour card. And he did not look like a man who knew the job was done. So he is one of those who is coming in this week feeling he has work to do to wrap up one of those 10 PGA Tour cards. And it's something that he very, very much wants. So interesting to see whether he finds that a motivator, as he did in Qatar, or that worry sort of seeps into his game in some way.
Great stuff. Lovely getting insight from in and around the course, which we don't always get. So thank you for that, Kit. Some great names there. Plenty of info, which I'll recap at the end. Before I do, I'm going to throw one more name at you because it's time for the final Who Am I? Yes, it's an all-star crew. It's Matt Cooper, it's Ben Colin, Kit Alexander. Some of the absolute echelons of this game, they're here, they're lining up for my pick this week. It's been hit or miss, mine. I've had some very close calls and some incredible miscuts. So let's see where we sit. Luckily, I'll definitely make the cut this week with my pick. But let's get into it. How it works is I pick someone I think is going to go well. Five clues each time you can jump in or you can sit on it. Ben goes for the approach of guess every time. Kit sits back a bit. Matt, who knows? We're going to find out today. It changes each time, but I'm excited to find out. I always start with the same clue, which is I have earned just under 7.5 million euros in my career.
Go on, I'll start.
Yes.
I'll go Adrian Ategi.
I was going to go Ryan Fox.
Okay. Any other guesses? Rolling.
I was going to go Rasmus Højgaard. Sorry.
Ryan That's Fox. Fine.
Højgaard from Ben. And Kit, did you have a name? They're all wrong. Perfect. Great. And a really nice moment there if you're watching this. Matt looks always top right. Ben goes top left. And they're sort of looking into each other's eyes, which on Ben Garst is really, really good. So Kit, if you look up, it'll be a beautiful moment. Okay, we'll go to number two, which is... My best finish in a major is tied for third. I'm not going to give you the major. I'm going to keep it looser than that.
We've got to move on, have we?
I like that. I agree. I think it's a move on because there's some thinking, there's some pursed lips, but fine. The best ranking I've reached in the world, this is clue number three, is 23rd. 23rd in the world. Clue number three.
Oh, it's Matt Wallace. It's definitely Matt Wallace. Third in the US PGA, maybe, I guess. US PGA, Bethpage. Is that right?
Everyone, round of applause. That is.
And
also, it's definitely so putting your neck on the line. Amazing. Yeah, 23rd in the world. Absolutely, it is Matt Wallace. Clue number four, I have 11 professional wins and I was runner-up here in 2018 were the final two. But yes, it's Matt Wallace again, as always. If you like a game but don't want to bet, then the DP World Tour website, you should definitely head on to play the fantasy game. You pick six players, play against friends, family, everyone, get bragging rights and finish the season on a high. The off season is roughly 12 hours before it starts again. You start looking for the next events, but definitely enjoy that and go well, Matt, this week. Okay, now it's time to turn our attention over to the PGA Tour. The RSM Classic from Sea Island Resort. Interesting one here that there are a couple of courses. Actually, rarely somewhere I say I can know well, as I went there for a week and played all of them back in April. But Plantation Seaside is where they split in Georgia, and many of the pros call it home. I think even Keegan Bradley, from memory, we were told by the caddy, has a place out back. I know Harris English, Davis Love. There's many and some incredible facilities they've got there, and think one of the busiest private airplane terminals I've ever seen. Every minute to see Simmons Island, since Simmons Island, they're arriving. So it's a great course overall. Yeah, that was actually a nice touch. And this is sponsored by one of the private companies I won't name. But yeah, it was great. And I didn't get a course record and I can't tell you anything about the course. But luckily, that's why we've got some of the experts on. So let's hear. Last time we did a bit of field action with Ben. And so let's go to Matt if we have a little look at the field. And this event, obviously, interesting time of the year. Lots of people, you know, in precarious positions and trying to secure all sorts of spots. And the field, some big names over in Dubai. So who sort of has caught your eye early on when looking through this and this event in general?
Yeah, it's probably worth just having a little word about what those final positions are all about. Yeah. The majority of the field are trying to make sure they're in the top 125, which will get them into full field events next year, plus the players. Whereas there are others who are trying to get into the next 10, they call it. That's being ranked 51 to 60 on the FedEx Cup, and that gets them into the Genesis and the AT&T Pebble Beach next next year. Amongst those, Ludwig Eber is chasing those spots, and he's the favourite this week for many obvious reasons. There's a little bit of an increase on in the quality of the field from the last couple of weeks. So Russell Henley and Brian Harman, the Open champion, are in the field alongside Cameron Young and Corey Connors. So it's an interesting and high quality field, and it's also an event, like you say, lots of people have got experience of it. Harris English always fascinates me. You mentioned him earlier, Ollie. Was really quite a high quality player a few years ago when he made the Ryder Cup, and of course he contended in the US Open early this year. This is the sort of course that looks absolutely made for him, and he actually lives here. And actually, his record's not that great considering all of that. He's a bit of a mystery in that regard. I'm sure Ben will talk about what the makeup of the course is, but generally speaking, it tends to be a place that's somewhat reminiscent of the likes of Harbour Town and Wailea and El Camaleon that used to be the home of the WWT Championship. That's changed now where that's hosted. I don't know whether that'll have an impact, because there has been a bit of a case in recent years where form in those events leading up to this has been somewhat useful, but it's also been a little bit difficult to spot. Adam Svensson's the defending champion. He had a victory on a very similar sort of resort to this in Georgia, the Landings Club, and also one in Bahamas, which again, similar sort of thing, by the sea, a bit windy. So that gives you a bit of a clue about what you're looking for this week. And then there are two courses, but I'll leave the chit-chat about the courses to Ben.
What are saying, how many people call this home? We're just having a quick look there from Zach Johnson, Jonathan Bird, Joey Garber, Higo, Will Gordon, Ben Griffin. It's a pretty special place, and Brian Harman as well. So what do we need to know about it, Ben?
Yeah, they added a second course in 2015. As you know, Ollie, there are a number of golf courses there, but they've added Plantation to the seaside course. And that, because I think Seaside is sometimes unfairly categorized as an easy golf course. And I don't think it is, actually. I think until they reverted to the two-course format, I think you got to sort of 12, 13, 14 under. You had a chance to win. And that's largely because it's exposed. They're certainly in the back nine, a lot of people will be familiar. It feels like there's trouble all the way down the left on pretty much every hole on the back nine. And some very difficult, challenging holes. But the addition of the Plantation has really lowered the scoring, and you've got to get towards 20 under. Although, again, I think only three or four players have got to 20 under in the last 5 years. So it's not a common thing, but that's a sort of good target, I would say. The difference with Plantation is, although it's almost exactly the same yardage, it's a par 72. You've got a couple of extra par fives to go at. Really, if your guy's not shooting 67 or better around there, they've got a bit of an uphill battle. They'd have to play flawlessly, or nearly flawlessly, I should say, in case Kit tells me off, for them to have a chance to actually win this title. But you look down the Roll of Honour, and it's kind of a similar field to last week in Bermuda, albeit a better field. Players like Austin Cook, Tyler Duncan, you won't find many more accurate drivers than those. Kevin Kisner, find fairways, make putts. Webb Simpson somehow has not won this, but has gone mighty close to doing so. Again, fairways and putts, good approach play. Driving the ball long is always an advantage, but less so here. And I would say the other thing to note is that the favourites have a kind of poor record. Kisner was a pretty short price, but generally speaking, you've got a lot of guys who we know they live here, we know they enjoy it, we know their quality, and yet they come here and they might just put their feet up a little bit. You know, it's known for its sort of party atmosphere, the end of term feel. So there's a chance that that is the case again.
I think it's interesting the fact that so many players live there. And I would say probably outside of sort of a few of the places around Florida, so, you know, Sawgrass and the Bears Club area, that kind of thing, Palm Beach, it's probably where you've got the highest concentration of current PGA Tour pros. But no one that's lived there or lived in the very close surrounding area has ever actually won here. Kevin Kisner being the slight exception. He was staying there temporarily while his normal house was being renovated when he won there, so they could claim that. But yeah, generally they don't fare especially well, and you would think it would be an advantage. The other thing that strikes me is we've got current major champion Brian Harman in the field, and Ludvig Åberg is the favourite. And it seems that every fall event that we've done this season where Ludvig has been in the field, he's been the favourite, which is absolutely remarkable when you think of the fact he turned pro in June. We know how good he's been since then. But he's leading the betting in a field that contains a bloke that won the Open Championship a month after Åberg turned pro. It's absolutely remarkable. I think to add to the sort of style of course a little bit, I think putting, I think you are going to need a fair bit around here. I think whether that be to save pars or to make birdies, I think they'll go low again, slightly better field than normal. And even though it hasn't changed in the calendar per se of when it's played, the relevance of where that is has changed. Normally, this is kind of the last proper event of the year, but we're in a wraparound season going into the new year. This time it's the last event, and that having to finish top 125, having to try and get into the top 60 for someone like Ludvig Åberg, who's 53 in the world right now, a good week gets him into the top 50, where if he stays there till the end of the year, he's in all the majors. There's a slightly more final feel, well, much more final feel than it, than just the last event of the year in a wraparound season. There's a bit more on the line. We've spoken about how that affects players in terms of the DP World Tour Championship and whether having that extra storyline or that extra thing to play for is a help or a hindrance. And that's at play this week as well in the RSM Classic. Are players going to take that pressure as motivation, or are they going to shy away from it somewhat and not find their best form?
I think that's a really good point, actually. And just briefly, Ollie, on Ludvig Åberg and Cameron Young, they're two of the top four in the betting. And I would say, I mean, you, egg on your face, I suppose, is the risk here. But if there's a course or a pair of courses where you'd sort of be kind of taking their main strength away, I do think it's these. You know, that you, I think you've got players like Harman and Henley who are far more suited to the nature of this challenge. Now, the scary thing, I suppose, with Ludvig is that he started to putt well. And if he continues to do that, then the sky really is the limit. But with Cam Young in particular, I'd say, you know, 330-yard drives down the middle are always good, but if the rest of your game's a little bit ropey, then you're going to struggle here, and I'd definitely be keen to take him on.
Yeah, great. I mean, as you say, I'm fascinated that Ludvig's head of the market, considering Brian Harman literally trains there and lives there as well and was runner-up last time. The one thing, and I don't know if it's any relevance at all, but I did find it fascinating that in the last nine editions, there have been five playoffs, which seems like a heck of a lot considering the other ones. And then they haven't been playoffs. They've been won by six strokes by Kevin Kisner, four from Austin Cook, three from Taylor Gooch. So it seems to be absolutely one or the other. It's sort of run away with it or keep it tight. But that's something that stood out. I would mention some of those other names just at the top of the market. We've mentioned Åberg, I think we're going for it 14-1. Then Henley at 18-1. Harman just behind at 20s alongside the big hitting Cam Young, and then the Canadian Corey Connors at 25s, and then we start heading the 30s, which a couple of informed players here, JT Poston going okay, but then Eric Cole at 33s. The name we seem to see every week is Justin Sir, who I feel like he's been on coverage at all times, and it seems a real prospect for the future, rounding off the sort of top seven. But let's get into your picks, and Matt, we'll start with you this time for who you're liking.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna go one from the top, please, Ollie, to begin with, because I'm going with Mackenzie Hughes, who you can get at 70-1. So it's big, I'm going big price kicking off. I just think this is a guy who, he made his breakthrough at PGA Tour with victory here. He also finished second on the course sometime later. So he really likes the challenge. He's been second and third at Corrales Punta Cana, similar sort of conditions. He's been second at PGA National. And a year ago, he was a winner at Jackson Country Club, which isn't a million miles away in terms of the test with Bermuda grass and breeziness. And the other thing I like about him is that when he gets himself a top 10, he very frequently gets himself another one quite quickly. And he shot 65, 63, 68 to finish the WWT Championship in Mexico, and he got seventh there. I think it's worth knowing when he's found a little bit of form, he keeps it for a little short while, and he's on a course that really, really suits him. I'm slightly surprised that you can get as big a price as you can about him.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he's gravitating towards Mackenzie Hughes at all. I just said obviously for the sake of it. He withdrew from the Bermuda Championship last week. That is not an obvious thing.
Oh, it's obvious. Because you listen to the pod, Ben. That's why. People listen. You know, we flagged it.
And the reason he did that is because he's wrapped up in 53rd place. I think he's all but mathematically sealed that spot in those events that we talked about, Riviera and Pebble Beach next year. I think that alone tells you the fact that he's up at 53rd in the FedEx Cup. You look at some of the names around him. Matt Kuchar, considerably shorter price. Some of those behind him, Alex Smalley, shorter. Luke Lister, recent winner. JJ Spawn's just behind him. You know, Mackenzie's probably not the most consistent player in the world, but as Matt says, when he's on, he's capable of winning events like this. And yeah, he's a he looks rock solid. The one for me, and I really like this selection, I have to say, never want to be overconfident. We have to remember there are a lot of players here who could potentially win this tournament. But I thought 40-1 about Billy Horschel was very, very big. When I saw the opening show, I thought, have I missed some poor golf since I remember Billy Horschel playing really well when he came over to Europe? And the answer is no, I haven't. His form is really strong. I think it's 5 top 20s in 6, and it should really be 6 because he was on course to finish in the top 5 or 6 in Ireland and had a poor final round. So he's really playing well. He's turned a corner. At the start of the year, some may remember that his swing got out of sync, and his work with Todd Anderson was much discussed. We had that video of him quite emotional at the Memorial Tournament, and that really felt like a turning of the tide for him. There's a nice sort of storyline there if he were to go and win here, because Todd Anderson is based at Sea Island. So Billy, for me, he first came on the radar here. A lot of people would have known about him already, but I remember him. I think he opened 64-64 about 10 or 12 years ago in this tournament. And spoke then about how well he knew the course from when he played in the SEC, a lot of amateur form here. By the way, Ludvig Åberg has won the Porter Cup here, the Jones Cup here, for whatever that's worth. But yeah, Billy knows the courses. He's not been a frequent visitor, and it's because he's not needed to be. But right now, he's 54th in the world, so he's not in the majors next year. He was in them this year because he played the President's Cup, but he's not in the majors next year. He's not in Riviera and Pebble Beach. He's not in the elite fields where he feels he belongs, where we know he belongs. And at 40-1, at a course suited to him that he knows, Bermuda greens, you know, he's probably the most prolific winner in the field in terms of PGA Tour. When you compare him with someone like Russell Henley, who wins, you know, once every 3 or 4 years, Billy Horschel won 7 times on the PGA Tour, a FedEx Cup, he's won at Wentworth. You know, he's a class act. I thought he's a 25-1 shot dressed up as a 40-1 shot. So he's my headline selection, yeah.
Brilliant. We like the confidence, and I couldn't agree more. And I hope I'm not doing disservice here, but he does seem a little league above him. May when he gets the big names and those events, struggles a bit more. We've seen that in majors, but and I put other people in this category back in the day. I think it was the Duffners and before Simpson and even Brand Snedeker. Sometimes you see them in events. If it's Canadian Open stuff, I think you'd think they'd be half that price overall. So Billy Horschel at 40s is very nice. Okay, gents, you've got another main pick before a bit of a potentially longer shot, bit of an outsider. So who are we throwing to there, Matt?
Yeah, I'm gonna finish up with Akshay Bhatia. I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, actually. I just think this is the sort of thing he might win at the moment. I mean, he may well be good enough to go and win in other stuff, but at the moment his sort of DNA looks to be that he likes playing breezy spots by the sea. He's got first and a couple of top tens in the Bahamas, second in the Puerto Rico. He was 10th in the Worldwide Technology Championship a couple of weeks ago, 20th in Bermuda last week. I think that's quite nice form. He was much shorter in the betting for both of those. He's longer because the field's a little bit better, but I think he's been pushed out a little bit too far at the moment. People will look at his course record and go miscut 45th last year. I think he's a more confident golfer now, and he did shoot a 61 last year on the easier course. So if he can add to that and also just find his game a little bit on the seaside course, I think he's got the game to contend.
About 66-1, I'm going to throw in Ben Griffin, and this feels like I believe this is our final podcast for the year, and it feels fitting, therefore, to have something of a panel selection, because I've seen this morning that Dave Tindall and Niall Lyons have both selected Ben Griffin. So, you know, I might as well join them. He shot 59 at the Plantation course in practice last year. He lives and plays out of Sea Island, knows the courses really well. He started well last year and faded to sort of 29th, but reading through the transcripts, he'd had food poisoning on Monday and Tuesday, so he wasn't at his best, let's say that. Let's be honest, he should have won by now. He had the Sanderson Farms within his grasp. He had Bermuda last year within his grasp and failed on both occasions. But I think he'll learn a lot from both of those. And he does seem, he's one of these, people will know his story. He almost gave up golf, I think he went and did an office job for a bit and came back to it, having been a promising amateur. So I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. And I was just reading from when he spoke before the Bermuda Championship last week, where he shot a second round 63 to suggest he's still not far away. He met Jack Nicklaus in Mexico at the event there through his sponsor, did a little putting competition, I think, with him. And he said Jack gave him some real words of encouragement about those near misses, because obviously one thing we know about Mr. Nicklaus is how many times, I can't believe I've just called him Mr. Nicklaus, many times he finished second, as well as all the times he won. I think that could really help Ben Griffin if he finds himself back in the mix. Matt's not going to stop laughing here. He's got the game for this. He's accurate off the tee, hits greens, he holds putts, he knows the course. We do have the Sea Island curse, it seems. None of them can get over the line, but he's a really solid player, Ben Griffin. I thought 66-1. He said as well, the last thing, he said going into Bermuda last week that he doesn't feel there's any concern about the 51-60. He feels safe. He's currently 54th. And he said, for me, I've got two more chances. It's all about winning, because he wants to get into the Masters, which he would have to win to do. Loads of reasons to expect Ben Griffin to play well. If anything, it feels like there are too many of us fancy him for this to actually happen. But fingers crossed, we can get a nice end to the year.
Yeah, sometimes you do feel that, don't you, that everyone's on, so it can't possibly happen. Baccio, I think, was the Twitter pick last week or so. And then if he wins this week, everyone calls it early week itis. And I don't know if we all believe in that. But I think Kit has a little bit more on Akshay to give a bit more information.
I like Akshay, but a young player starting to really fulfil his promise and got engaged not that long ago. Now, we know about the nappy factor. I know, Matt, you're quite big and informed on that. And that's when a player has a baby or is expecting a baby, their form takes an uplift. If anyone knows about a thing called an engagement factor, I don't know if it's even a thing yet. Matt, I know you're the man to know about it. Is it a thing? Should it be a thing?
I think if anybody's less well qualified for an engagement factor, at my age, never having been married, I am the least likely person to know what potential benefit it would be to life. Yeah. I will trust you, Kit. And yeah, I think that it can only be good, can't it? Put a smile on his face.
I'll say with the engagement factor, one of the players, he's not my selection, Ollie, so please come back to me for an actual one. But I did put up Kelly Kraft last week at a big price, and he played quite well for a bit. And he has, I think he's playing quite well in general. He got engaged here at Sea Island. So if the engagement factor, and it was 10 years ago, so if the engagement factor does exist, then maybe Kelly Kraft's going to build on last week.
Brilliant. Okay, that isn't it, though. So, dude, let's roll into your, I think we've got one more each, don't we? It's a bit of a potential longer shot, but a bit of a third and final pick for the year. So this is the one we're going to hold on to.
I wouldn't dissuade anyone from pretty much any long shot this week. It's one of those events you get strange things happen here. Kit's quite rightly mentioned that it might be a little bit more serious than it has been in the past, but I do think the courses are a real leveler. The ones I like the look of at massive prices are actually very similar in that they both won the tournament before. One is Austin Cook, who I think the putter's clicked for him. It's hard to tell because we don't have a lot of strokes gain data for the last month or so, but it looks like it has. And with it, he's had some results. Now he's a brilliant winner here as a rookie. He's a fairways first golfer. I do quite like him. But I think probably the form in general, sort of over a wider view, of Tyler Duncan is quite a bit stronger, and he's the same price. And I think he's the same price because he missed the cut in Mexico, and that's all. And Tyler Duncan is 24th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained off the tee, despite being a short hitter. What that tells you is he's so accurate that he can be almost elite off the tee. And Mexico is a strange course in general, but I feel probably it wouldn't have favoured a player like Tyler Duncan. Well, before that, he'd finished in the top 20 of back-to-back events. He's played well in the Honda Classic and Corrales, some of the events Matt mentioned, with Mackenzie Hughes. So the fact that he did win this event, albeit it was a massive surprise at the time, now we know more about him, does make sense. And as I say, accurate off the tee, hits a lot of greens, top five in this field for overall fairways and greens accuracy. The putter's the worry with him. If he can warm that up, and there were some good signs over the past sort of 6 weeks, then I think he's a 200-to-1 shot with a better chance than that. So yeah, I'll take Tyler Duncan in an event that sort of sees the same players pop up year upon year.
Great.
Yeah, and I'll just be a little bit contrary, Ollie, and with my final pick actually go down and go JT Poston at 33-1. I was just a little bit surprised that you could get that price about a guy who we haven't seen him for a long time, but his form during the summer was just really, really solid. Top 7-5 out of his last eight starts. One of those was at Sedgefield, which he's won. And whilst there's a lot of differences between that track and this one, it is similar in the sense that your short irons have got to be hot and then you've got a whole lot of putts. He's never quite clicked here. He's got quite a lot of missed cuts, but he has also got a couple of top 25s and he's got three top 10s at Harbortown, which is kind of useful form guide. I just thought he should have been shorter than 33-1.
Perfect. Okay, well, that wraps it up. That is all of them. The picks, the insights, the information, everything for the year. And I'll do a quick recap on them now. Time for that recap. And we're going to start with Ben Coley in Dubai, who liked Minwoo Lee, Adrian Maronk and Vincent Norman, the big hitting Swede, to go well at the Earth Course at JGE. And then over at Sea Island, it was Billy Horschel, Ben Griffin and Tyler Duncan completing his selections. And then Matt Cooper, to finish off this year, had Matt Fitzpatrick, the first time he believes he's ever picked him, to go well. And then it was a special bet of Rory McIlroy, first round leader, and Sami Valamäki rounded off his selections in Dubai in the season finale. And then at the RSM, it was Mackenzie Hughes, Akshay Bhatia and JT Poston to round off the selections for this year on the tips. Yeah, well, that is done. And thank you so much for your time, Ben, Matt and Kit. Sadly, Kit, a couple of technical issues, I think, in Dubai. Maybe he's just being sent out there to, just go do some recces, kick some balls into fairways on some of the tips, just all the good stuff that we need from Kit in the practice rounds. We'll sort out Vincent Norman's driver. But thank you so much for joining. Hopefully we find a winner on our final pod of the series. Now, before I let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot here, gents, because it's been a great year, both on and off the show. So I want the highlight from the season so far on the DP World Tour from each of you. So Ben Coley at Ben Coley Golf. Thank you, Ben. And what would that be from a personal point of view or a storyline point of view or anything else?
Oh, well, from a purely selfish point of view, either Victor Perez winning in Abu Dhabi or Nick Packham winning in South Africa. And the reasons for those, there have been a few other winners. It's not been the best year on the DP World Tour, but it's been a good one. But the reason for those is they both felt like a lot of people in the circles we're involved in, we're involved in those selections. And it's always nice. We talked about it earlier with Ben Griffin, and it feels like the more people are in agreement, the less chance a golfer has, which is, of course, nonsense. Yeah. But it does feel like that sometimes. And with Backham and Victor Perez, it didn't matter. So they'd be among the highlights for me. I'm struggling to think what the sort of feel-good story would be. I did enjoy Todd Clements winning and the pure joy he took in that sparkling final round, and the fact that he won just after his friend Dan Brown. You know, these are players who've been through all the tiers. And as we talk now, final stage Q school is ongoing. So these are players who know what it's like to go through either Q school or Euro Pro and Challenge Tour and whatever other tours. And it's great to see that emergence of players like them. So I'll put them in there as well. But yeah, I'm a selfish person, so I'll give you Nick back.
We don't mind selfish people, and especially when you're getting good money for the fans, for the multitude of followers on Twitter at Ben Cady Golf. So thank you, Ben, for all your hard work and insights. It's been fantastic. Matt, what about yourself? Which coffee date was it that stood out this year, either on or off the course?
I can't think of what that would have been, but I think my sort of on course highlight was, I think the Ryder Cup was just very special in Rome. I think the DP World Tour and the European team did a great job on and off the course. Great effort by Luke Donald and the team. I think my sort of punting highlight I'd have to go to the Open actually. And it's not a coffee date, but a pizza date was responsible for Brian Harman. My pizza date was late on the Monday before the Open. And as a consequence, I started looking at results and noticed that Brian Harman had a good Open record, had played well all year whenever he was by the seaside at a blustery golf course, and I got him at big odds. So that was fantastic. But even better was, I thought the Open itself was great fun, even in the terrible weather of the final day. And I was staying in a tent and it tipped it down and we still survived it. And it was absolutely fantastic. That would be my highlight.
Oh, perfect. I don't know what the opposite of glamping is, but that's what that is in and around Liverpool in the rain. But luckily you picked a winner and maybe you can afford a door or some walls next year. So fingers crossed that's what happens there. Beautiful. And now we will just go to Kit, who's resolved all the issues. He's plugged it in. He's turned it on at the wall. And Kit, what is your highlight from DP World Tour this season?
And actually, it's incredible. They've both pipped me for an already mentioned what my two highlights were going to be, and I was going for high end and not so high. And so the Ryder Cup was absolutely unbelievable. I thought the drama was sensational, the European performances, when we'd all been written off by a lot of people. But you know, I felt confident from over a year in advance. I always thought at home we'd be good, and it was a transitional time for the European team, but I thought we had some great young talent coming through, and that proved to be the case. We went and got the win, and I thought, well, do you know what? There's no way they're going to pick Dan Brown and Todd Clements winning. And the reason that I like that is, obviously, I worked on the Euro Pro Tour back in the day, and they're two guys that have come through from that level. And a shout out to the Challenge Tour graduates that have won as well. Four Challenge Tour graduates have won on the DP World Tour this season. Three Q School guys as well. And we talk about a win like Camilo Villegas and things like that. And sometimes when you take the superstars out of a tournament, the actual storylines you get are that much more meaningful. And I really enjoy when I see players that I know or players that have had a bit of a journey to get to the top of the game, like a Dan Brown and a Todd Clements, when I see them win. So for me, it's those two as well, and the Ryder Cup. So I'm sorry for just piggybacking and jumping on the two picks of the other guys as well. But before they even started talking, those were the two things that jumped to my mind. So that's what I'm going to stick with.
Great. No apology needed. It's just good taste. And I'm sorry, I did disservice to the millions of followers for Matt Cooper Golf on Twitter. That's where you'll find him. And at Kit on the Course as well. Their brilliant overview on all of the highlights. It's been a fantastic season. I've been Ollie Silverton, your host for all of it. Thank you for joining us this week and every week. As I say, let's hope we end with a bang. I'm not asking too much if I say let's get a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in both events. I think that's absolutely fair. And thank you for joining us throughout the season. Enjoy the golf. Good luck with your picks. And we'll see you next year on The Tips.